in middle and high school, the sport you play can say a lot about you. This year, Wisconsin schools added an unexpected option, mountain biking. The state is only the 12th in the country to offer the opportunity for students to compete in this adrenaline-heavy, demanding outdoor sport. Laurel White visited a race recently and filed this report.
It's a brisk fall day, and around two dozen athletes are at the starting line. The countdown ends, and the cyclists begin the climb up a steep hill. This is the last race of the first season of the Wisconsin High School Cycling League. There are 16 teams, and they come from all over the state. Cedarburg, Janesville, Wausau, Maquonago. Kathy Mock, whose son Dax is racing today, is one of the founders of the league. She says mountain biking is drawing a lot of interest because it's a sport that lets everyone play.
The number one thing I would say, nobody sits the bench. You never sit the bench. At a practice, nobody sits the bench. At an event, if you want to race, nobody sits the bench.
Riders also love that it connects them with the outdoors. Ava Miller, a 17-year-old rider from Shorewood, says that's definitely a draw for her.
Being out on the trails and just you and knowing how, like, I just like being outside and, like, on the trails.
Today, Ava has some pre-race jitters.
Very nervous. I have butterflies.
But she has a good strategy to cope.
I usually have songs going through my mind to take it off how tired my legs are.
It's a competition, but the atmosphere around the grounds is friendly. Riders are bundled up in puffy coats, their folding chairs pulled in tight next to each other. They're laughing and eating sandwiches their parents brought. 15-year-old Hannah Mork and 13-year-old McKenna Dwyer have gone back and forth, alternating getting first and second in girls' JV races all season. They're fierce competitors, but they're also really good friends. Hannah and McKenna caused a lot of commotion on the grounds around noon. First, people started jogging from the woods, where the riders were about to merge to go down the home stretch. Then the whole crowd started running toward the finish line. The girls were neck and neck.
I was leading the first lap, and then she passed me at the single track back there, and then I would just stay on her wheel for the last two laps.
Like, the whole third lap, I was trying to shake her, and she wouldn't drop, and, you know, then I was thinking, great, it's going to come down to the final sprint, and that got me scared because we raced here, like, about a year ago, and she got me, like, in a sprint, so I knew, like, it could be like that again, and, you know, when we turned that corner and we were all out sprinting it, and I could see I had a wheel of her, and so then when I finished line, I was like, wow.
Hannah ended up winning by half a second. Of the four races this season, Hannah won two and McKenna won two. So who gets the season high point trophy?
We talked about it and we said we both deserve it. So whatever happens, we're sharing.
Yeah,
we're splitting it.
Share the title.
Yeah.
League officials agreed.
And your 2014 co-JV champions from Wausau United Ride and Camrock Composite, respectively, Hannah Mork and McKenna Dwyer.
And so ended the first season of the Wisconsin High School Cycling League. Organizers expect the league to grow next year, and McKenna and Hannah, as well as some of their teammates, are hoping to make it to nationals. Until then, riders will train for next fall. For now, they may need some snow tires on those mountain bikes. Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Paying for college isn't getting any easier these days. Tuition and fees seem to be going up, causing lots of students to rack up debt, which could have serious consequences down the road.
But our next guest says that paying for college doesn't have to ruin you for life, and there are hidden resources, little-known cost-cutting methods, and money-saving strategies to successfully plan and pay for college. And if done right, it can be possible to graduate without the burden of all that debt.
Joining us now is Lynette Calfani-Cox. She's the CEO and co-founder of The Money Coach. She's also a former financial news journalist and the author of the new book, College Secrets, How to Save Money, Cut College Costs, and Graduate Debt-Free. Her website is askthemoneycoach.com. Lynette, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me back on the show. Good to be with you both.
So graduating debt-free, that sounds like a lofty, if not kind of impossible, goal. How achievable is that?
Sounds like a pipe dream, right? Well, it's definitely the case that most students do have student loans when they get out of school. In fact, right now, if you look at some of the latest statistics, about 70% of all students, all college grads, do have student loans, and they're up to, you know, about $33,000 in debt when you look at the class of 2014. But my message is to tell people that with some planning and some preparation, certainly with some sort of insider knowledge about what's available and out there to you, you can definitely drastically slash the cost of college. And yes, it is possible to even graduate debt-free. Hmm.
Well, I imagine for a lot of families, in an ideal world, the planning for college would begin sometime around when the baby is born, when they adopt, right away, instead
exactly.
of when it probably happens in the real world, which is somewhere much later down the road. How early should college planning begin?
Well, you're right that it should start in an ideal world. It would start, like, once the kid is born. But, you know, obviously we don't live in a perfect society. None of us are perfect people. And the fact of the matter is that life gets in the way. Everybody's dealing with a whole host of bills. They're juggling the mortgage or the rent payments. They've got utilities. They got to put, you know, food on the table, car notes. So there's all these other obligations, the sort of day-to-day that gets in the way that, of course, makes it difficult for most folks to think about saving for a longer-term goal, like, say, college, if they have a three-year-old or whatever. But, yes, you have phenomenally more options and potentially more strategies that you can use if you start at a younger age. But I don't want to discourage your listeners who feel like, oh, my God, I'm a late starter. I have a kid in junior high school or a kid in high school or even a kid who's a senior and who's doing the college apps right now like my daughter is doing. And because they can, in fact, make some smart choices as well that can reduce their student loan burden as well.
Well, what are a couple specific rules of thumb that can help people plan no matter what the stage?
Well, I guess the first thing that I tell all families, certainly the parents who are frequently footing the bill as well as the students, is that you really shouldn't think about college costs in terms of what I call the upfront costs. That's the tuition, fees, room and board. So we all hear a lot about, you know, tuition escalating and the expensive nature of room and board. But frankly, that's only a fraction of the totality of college expenses. And people should be thinking about the hidden side of college as well, the sort of back-end expenses, because that's where most families pay a lot of out-of-pocket expenses. So families who actually have students who get scholarships based on merit or even need-based aid if they've applied for financial aid, they can frequently get their tuition lowered. And in fact, you know, a lot of schools discount tuition to the tune of 50% or more. So you may get, you know, scholarship money or need-based aid to help cover the tuition, but all of that stuff that happens when your kid is in school, the parking fees on campus, that fifth year of study, whether or not they join a fraternity or a sorority, whether or not they do internships, whether or not they go and study abroad, nobody really talks too much about that stuff. And that's the back end cost of college that takes a lot of families by surprise. So by knowing what resources are available to tackle some of those hidden expenses, you can, in fact, defray those costs tremendously.
Right. So quickly before we move on, how do you get a reasonable estimate about what that might be for your student?
It ain't easy. Unfortunately, it's not easy at all. And, you know, I literally spent 2 years worth of research to write College Secrets and the companion book, College Secrets for Teens, to really do the heavy lifting for a lot of families, to go online, to visit a number of campuses all across the country, to talk to financial aid specialists, admissions counselors, high school guidance counselors, et cetera. In a nutshell, though, it's ultimately up to each family to do a lot of homework. But I think part of it is just knowing in advance what expenses you are likely to encounter. So, you know, most people don't know about tuition differential charges or surcharges if they have certain majors. So, you know, if your kid is an engineering major or a music major, journalism, photography major, that kind of thing, expect that the price that you see online, there's going to be an adjustment or an additional cost factored into that. You know, if you think that your kid might want to do some academic field work or maybe some research projects, expect that there will be a cost associated with that. Expect to get hit up while the kid is in school for all kinds of memorabilia. So tell your kid, stay out of that bookstore on campus. That's usually one of the worst places to buy things, including college textbooks. So part of it is arming yourself with knowledge beforehand to know, okay, these are the other expenses that nobody told me about. Now let me think about how I'm going to tackle some of these college costs, or frankly, how I can even eliminate them entirely, because I really do believe that a lot of people could completely forego certain things or at least reduce the cost dramatically.
Well, looking at that college tuition, which I think is sort of the sticker shock a lot of people get when they're checking out colleges, you say that's not that relevant to what you're talking about. Now, part of it is you're saying, look at the back end cost that we just talked about. But what about the tuition itself? How can we negotiate that and get a better deal?
Well, I outlined 16 strategies to reduce college tuition. And it's everything from, of course, taking advantage of in-state bargains to looking at colleges that are offering a degree in 3 years. So, of course, you'll get a bachelor's or of arts or a bachelor of science degree, a four-year degree. But there are many schools that say, here, we'll help you to complete it more quickly. So that third year is way better on the living side than paying for 4 years' worth of college. I talk about getting what I call the sort of two-step option going if you think your child might do better at a community college. The caveat there, because frankly the research is not so good in favor of those who start off at a community college in terms of college completion rates or actually being able to transfer credits to four-year institutions. So the caveat I would give there is to make sure that you have what's called an articulation agreement in place to make sure those credits do in fact transfer. But you can get tuition waivers. You can prepay certain amounts for college. You can do creative things like attending either school overseas or maybe even going to a no-tuition college. Yes, they do exist. You can even think about ways that you can work in certain fields where the college itself might pay your tuition. So it's about, again, getting a little bit creative. And even for some people, they might say, well, listen, I'm not going to necessarily go to school in Wisconsin. I want to go out of state. And, of course, we all know that out-of-state tuition typically is 2 to 3 times more for non-residents. So one of the strategies there is to make sure that you go through a regional exchange program if you're looking to go out-of-state. And in a nutshell, a regional exchange program is one where students in sort of nearby territories or states are able to get the same rate as in-state students or at least pay a lot less than out-of-state students typically pay. So in your neck of the woods, for instance, there's the Midwest Student Exchange, and it's available to students in 9 different states. So if someone in Wisconsin wasn't going to go in-state, maybe they were going to go to one of your neighboring states in say, Minnesota or Michigan or maybe Illinois, they can save a lot of money just by going through the Midwest Student Exchange. They agree to essentially cap the tuition that students pay if they come from out of state. They cap it at no more than a maximum of 1.5 times the in-state resident tuition rate, and that's for public schools.
We're talking right now with financial expert Lynette Kalfani-Cox about planning and paying for college with an end goal of graduating debt-free. And we'd like you to join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
If you're getting ready to go to college or the parent of a soon-to-be student, what questions do you have about tackling college costs? If you've already earned your degree, how did you pay for it? Do you have some tips and tricks that you use to save a few bucks and keep debt down along the way? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with financial planning expert Lynette Kalfani-Cox about how to cut college costs and how to get a degree without racking up massive debt in the process. You can join our conversation with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234.
If you are in the planning stages, if you have some questions, share your thoughts, or if you have done it and managed to graduate debt-free, tell us how you did it. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we take a caller right right now. We've got Alex joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to make a comment. I'm currently a college student at UW Green Bay in my senior year, and I've been fortunate enough to be awarded a few different scholarships. And so I would say scholarships are an option to keep at the forefront of the mind for any person looking to get into a college or currently in college, for parents as well, because I sat down and crunched the numbers, and even with small scholarships that haven't covered all of my tuition costs, I've been able to, in a way, pay myself more than any employer has ever paid me, upwards of $20 an hour for the time it takes to fill out a scholarship application, or even in considering ones that I fail to be awarded, but just the one or two that I get. So basically saying it's definitely an economic smart move, even if you lose, mm-hmm. you know, 9 out of 10 scholarships.
And Alex, did you have to go hunting for those scholarships, or were they pretty easy to find?
Relatively easy to find. There's, you know, a good laundry list full of websites that there are scholarships, but the ones that are best to hunt down, I've noticed, have been the ones that your university or the university lists.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Alex. He's got some ideas about going after the scholarships.
Sure. And Alex makes a great point about essentially the ROI involved here, the return on investment. You know, a lot of students won't take the time and effort that it takes to secure those scholarships because they think, oh, my God, there's so many people applying, or what are my chances or my odds? But you know what? If you get it, like he said, the return is phenomenal, because even a $500 scholarship, a $1,000 scholarship, if you spent 8 hours on it, and you probably won't spend that much time on it, you're getting way more than you would get certainly working for an employer, you know, getting paid minimum wage, essentially. But one of the things that I talk about in College Secrets in terms of how to avoid student loan debt is that scholarships and grants, which are, of course, free money that don't have to be repaid, that's definitely one of the 5 different ways that you should look at funding a college education without resorting to loans.
Well, thanks so much, Alex. Let's go on next to Brian in Milwaukee. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Yes, thank you for letting me talk. When we have children, we should recognize that it's our decision to have the children, not the children's decision to be born. And so we take responsibility as parents for their lives. It doesn't stop at the age of 18. And therefore, I mean, I know understanding different people's economic situations and things that come up, it can't be, foreseen. But in general, it should be the parents should put out money and save money for their children to have a college education.
Okay, thanks. Brian is saying that it's his responsibility as a parent to look out for the kids and make sure that there's some money in the bank. What do you say to that? It's a nice ideal, obviously.
I actually agree personally, because I know that for my children, I don't want them to have any student loans whatsoever, and I don't want to borrow on their behalf as well. The reality is that most families haven't done, quote-unquote, on paper, the right thing. They've not saved adequately and sufficiently. But if we're talking about either a moral imperative, a moral responsibility, or even a legal responsibility, he's definitely correct that in many states, your obligation to provide for your child's welfare and well-being does not, I repeat, does not just automatically terminate at the age of majority, say 18 or even 21. I'm in New Jersey, and in fact, there was a major case here recently where a student who was from New Jersey sued her parents, and a court sided with her based on state Supreme Court law that said, yes, the parents, and she was 21, the parents must pay for her college education. So he's right, certainly from a legal standpoint, and then we can debate the merits about some people say, let them work for themselves. I had to work to put myself through school. In College Secrets, I talk about why it's not, I repeat, not financially possible for the average student today to sort of pull him or herself up by the bootstraps and completely put her, you know, themselves through school. It can be done in some cases, especially if you do the junior college route, et cetera, but at the average 4-year institution, which is $20,000 plus per year for public school and $40,000 average annual cost all in for private schools, they'd be working 40-plus hours a week and would never finish on time.
Well, Lynette, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time today. That was Lynette Kalfani-Cox. Her new book is called College Secrets, How to Save Money, Cut College Costs, and Graduate Debt-Free.